center and coming in is Loeb. Billendijk center net. McDonald scores! Matty McDonald!
And over at that Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
And he's stopped by Markstrom from point blank range.
Here goes, put it in the win column!
Yeah!
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get this hour going. It is Tuesday, April 9th, and this hour of Flames Talk is underway on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcast. Steinberg along with you as we kick things off on the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockandSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. Hopefully your Tuesday is going along well. We got a busy hour for you here on Flames Talk, and we're kicking it off by saying hello to our NHL insider. It's a Tuesday, which means we say hello to Frank Saravalli, brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com. And Frank joins us now from Daily Faceoff and DailyFaceoff.com. Hello, Mr. Saravalli. How are you?
I'm pretty good. It's a 20-degree day in Philadelphia. We're seeing some signs of spring after a rainy stretch, and life is good.
That's what I like to hear. That's we are not that. We're rainy, but we're better than snowy. So that is good to that is good for us with the way the month of March and April have gone. Hey, you know, Frank, it's crazy. I was thinking about this on Tuesday morning as I was getting ready for the show. I was thinking about this and prepping things and putting things together. One of the last times I saw you was at the Heritage Classic in Edmonton for that game in late October between the Flames and Oilers at Commonwealth. And, you know, at the time, neither the Flames nor the Oilers were in a very good spot, and both teams were off to miserable starts to the season. Fast forward a number of months, here we are in early April, and the Oilers are clinched and jockeying for position in the Pacific Division, and the Flames are officially eliminated. I think we all know the reasons why things have gone the way they've gone for both teams, and especially in this market, but it's just crazy that, you know, those two teams for one of the marquee games of the year have gone in such drastically different directions since they played that afternoon.
It is amazing the ground that the Oilers made up. And I think a lot of that really has to do with the fact that you win 24 games consecutively, a 16-game winning streak and an 8-game streak, and you do that at a critical juncture in your season, considering where they started, and that's going to put you in a great spot. Now, mathematically or statistically, you look at the standings since that date, or some say made their coaching change, they're so far and away above everyone else in the rest of the league in points percentage. The gap between Oilers and number two, to find a gap that big, you need to go all the way down 20th in the league. Mm-hmm. It's significant. So they've earned it. They're in a spot where they're still going to have likely a first round, whether it's Kings or the Golden Knights, and a long way from, I think, being, you know, even favorite, considering on the other side of the bracket. But the Flames, I think, it tells you that that was one kind of tougher part for Calgary season, was that never any sustained winning streak. Like, did they have a winning streak of five games?
Five games is the longest one they've had, yep.
They didn't get to six, right?
No.
So, and
no.
They didn't, it took a while to get to that five games, if I'm not mistaken.
It did, yep.
So, yep. I mean, it's not to say that you need five, six, seven game winning streaks over the course of the season, but look at the Pittsburgh Penguins right now, and look at the New York Islanders. When you're able to string together eight wins in a 10-game stretch, you're going to be in a pretty deep spot.
Yeah. Frank, we're just going to drop you and reconvene. As I know the phone connection not great, and was hoping it was going to correct itself. So we're just going to drop Frank and reconvene and bring him back, and hopefully the connection will be a little bit stronger and a little less choppy. We're chatting with Frank Saravalli, our Daily Faceoff NHL insider, joins us Tuesdays here on Flames Talk. And so now that the Flames are where they are, and the Flames are in the situation they're in, and we'll see if they can get some things going positively going into the offseason and going into next season. We got Frank back. Appreciate that, Frank. Just wanted to make sure that we could reconnect and get a stronger connection with you, which usually works. You know, so as the Flames are now...
Hey yo, Pat, yeah. I haven't been dropped like that since high school. What's going on?
At least I gave you a warning. It wasn't. I didn't blindside
you. Not really. All I heard was, hey, we're dropping you, click. And I'm like, what did I say? Holy smokes.
Yeah, watch your mouth. We picked
yeah,
up.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, thank God this isn't on TV. So, I mean, I know I'm not good looking, so I just don't know what I said. It's a phone conversation. Like, be nice.
We picked up about 85% of what you said on the last one, so just wanted to get you with a stronger connection, and indeed we have. You sound crystal clear this time around, so I'm glad I dropped you. But we made up. Here we are. We're reconciling, and we're back on the same page. I like it. You know, Frank, one of the guys that is such a big part of the excitement surrounding the Flames and where they could be in 2, 3, 4 years down the road, and as they go through this process, is Dustin Wolf. He's getting the start Tuesday night in San Jose in his hometown rink, which is a pretty cool story. But I'm curious, like, whether it's your observations or you talk to people around the league every single day, what does the rest of the league say about Dustin Wolf? What's the overall consensus on Calgary's top goaltending prospect?
I think they all wish they had him. That's the easiest way to say it. I mean, unless you're a team that has one of the 6 bona fide starters in the league where you can rest your head on the pillow at night and sleep comfortably. I mean, Dustin Wolf is the next it guy when it comes to the crease. And he's made that part clear in the American League. He's making increased statements over the course of the last couple months of this season at the NHL level. And he's someone that I think is really only just beginning to scratch the surface of what he can be. And that's such an enticing option for the Flames to have, in that if you could check that box and check it for the next decade, outside of maybe getting yourself a Connor McDavid or Connor Bedard or generational talent up front or on your blue line, I'd argue that second only to that generational stud forward, this is exactly the position you want to solve for. And they're in a great spot.
And it's not linear, right? I mean, we've seen really promising goaltenders get off to great starts and then take a step back and they have some struggles. They figure it out, and then they finally get to the sustained level. I think of John Gibson, and when he broke into the league, and the guy was, you know, in playoff series stopping 45 and 50 shots. Well, that didn't mean that he just automatically carried that over, and it took him a little while to establish himself, and plenty of other goalies. It takes time, right? I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to be 100% ready to start 55 games next season.
I think you guys are much closer to another guy that I think of in a similar vein.
Yeah.
Although I think Dustin Wolf has a lot of, I think he has more upside, but I think an intriguing kind of comparable to look at would be Thatcher Demko and Van. Someone that, you know, took a little while to grab the reins, partly because of some of the goalies that they had ahead of him, which is, you know, obviously true with Wolf. And has all the talent in the world and needs to kind of grow into what he could be. So that part, I think, is an interesting comp, but I think the ceiling's better for Wolf. So that's where the excitement comes in.
Yeah.
Really live up to it. And almost, like, to be fair, like, almost nothing is linear outside of the generational talents like the McDavids and Bedards.
Yep.
And I actually had a great conversation about this with Kent Hughes, the GM of the Montreal Canadiens, today on a pod that dropped, Frankly Speaking episode. Like, we talked a lot about developing players and how, you know, even he said the part out loud that most GMs don't. And we were talking about, you know, some of the players that are in their lineup right now. And he's saying, I fully expect some of these guys to hit roadblocks next season. I don't know who it's going to be. I don't know why. I don't know how long it's going to last. But, you know, at varying points, there are hiccups. And that's to be expected. It's just that for whatever reason, because managers don't mouth it, and it's mostly because they don't want to, no one wants to lend credence to that idea that their players could fumble or stumble, I should say, that's really kind of what fan bases should, I don't want to say be retrained to think, but reprogram themselves, that it's not, there is no line of progression here to expect that it's just going to all be on the up and up.
Yep. Very well said. Last thing on the Flames, Frank, and that's just, you know, we've talked a little bit over the last couple of weeks about, and your chat with Craig Conroy from GM's meetings. And, you know, one of the things that really jumped out to a lot of people was him telling you that, hey, we've got cap space and we intend to use some of it to hit the free agent market. You know, and I think the intention there is not to go out and sign a bunch of crazy long-term deals, but instead to kind of augment the roster in the short term as they go through this transition phase and look for those maybe 1, 2, and 3-year deals for players that can come in and help play a role as this team goes through their process. And I think that's an important thing to point out, because I think there were some anyway who interpreted it as, holy, they're going to go big game hunting in free agency. I don't know if that's necessarily what he was talking about. It's all about being
that's
a part
idiotic.
Of this plan.
That's idiotic. Anyone who listened to Flames talk should understand exactly what I said and should read, like, develop a little bit of reading comprehension from my story in which I said exactly that.
Yeah.
The Flames aren't looking for big name free agents. They're not going out and opening up the checkbook to spend on 7 and 8 year deals for the big boys. That's not their intention, even in the slightest, and never should have been portrayed as such. So whoever did that, shame on you, and go back to high school in terms of taking some reading comprehension courses. The truth is the Flames are looking for support pieces.
Yeah.
They're looking for bridge, you know, guys to bridge gaps.
Bridge players, yeah.
Where you don't want to throw the kids that you're developing in the AHL for the Wranglers. You don't want to throw them to the Wolves. And I thought, here's another way to frame it for you. There's a piece today on Daily Faceoff by Matt Larkin, who sat down with Barry Trotz, first-year GM in Nashville, and he said that one of the things he realized was that we always, you know, there's always this cliche that's thrown around, the NHL is not a developmental league. But he said one of the things that he learned, and this point was drove home in talking to another manager, was that when you don't see it necessarily in the moment, but sometimes when you ask young players to do too much, it's not even that they can't thrive. It's that they are struggling to literally survive in the NHL. They're struggling to keep their head above water. And I think that part really hit home for me, because that's the last thing the Flames want to do.
Yeah.
They're going to need to pay players to come in on 2, 3, and 4 year deals at mid-tier acceptable prices that can help basically just be a crutch for this team. That's the stage that they're in. They're not infants, but they're basically, they need a crutch from growing and developing to the finished product, mm-hmm. and they need some people to come in and bridge that for them, and that's the purpose of spending in free agency.
Yep. I didn't mean to get you all riled up like that, but I never regret it.
Well, it pisses me off because let me tell you what happens is I talk to Craig Conroy at GM meetings. I write the story and I write it in full truth and transparency. And some jagaloon goes on social media and says the opposite or tries to play it up for more than what it is. And it's problematic for me because then the next thing that happens is Craig Conroy, next time I see him, I'm like, well, damn, like it's not me. I didn't do anything wrong. But it creates a reluctance for people to be transparent because then he says, well, what do I need to say anything for? I'll just keep it to myself and I'll just do what it is that I need. And it's BS because Flames fans deserve to at least have some line of thinking. And he's trying to provide that. And some idiot is going to do something else.
Well, I again, as I said, I didn't mean to, but I do always appreciate a good, passionate Frank Saravalli drop like that.
I want fans to understand where I come from because I don't, there's no hyperbole in it for me. I'm not typing in Flames, you know, potentially looking for free agents this summer into my headline because I'm trying to generate clicks. I'm doing that because those are the words that came out of Craig Conroy's mouth. And if someone wants to twist them into something else, then it makes it problematic for everyone.
Yeah, and you're just trying to report the story and report what you heard. I feel you, for sure. And I think a lot of people at this day, it happens all the time these days when one thing is said and it turns into something else. I'm fully with you on that front. We are we're chatting with Frank Saravalli on Flames Talk, our daily face-off NHL insider.
Stop laughing.
I'm not.
You dropped me, and now you made me angry.
No, I'm laughing because I was gonna go somewhere. I was gonna be like, Frank, I hear you said that Connor McDavid is done for the season, but I'm like, no. You know what? I'm not gonna do that. That's that would not be reading the room.
Next time, I'll drop you. So easy.
What do we know about this Connor McDavid injury? It sounds minor. Is that a good way of putting it?
Yes, day to day, and I think unfortunately, for hockey fans, is what we miss out on potentially is the Art Ross race. So, you know, the best interests of the Oilers, they're keeping in mind the long view and a playoff run, which I totally get. And obviously that's the priority, but the shame of it is it's just, you know, I think at some point with four games left or five games left, what you're looking at is a two-horse race instead of a three-horse race.
What about the news on Jack Hughes? What do we know about his season-ending shoulder surgery, how it came about, so on and so forth?
I actually don't know much. I've followed, obviously, the hemming and hawing and will he play, will he not, what's the decision, what's the thought process. You're dealing with one of the game's great talents who started the season on such a tear that was incredibly impressive and obviously missed a big chunk of this season that not only hurt him but hurt this team and their playoff chances. And the fact that the Penguins and the Islanders and all these teams have gotten back in the race, there's been a big indictment on the Devils' season, I think, of the fact that they're not in that conversation and picture for a team that won a playoff round last year. So that part hasn't been easy. And just like with McDavid, the long view is in mind that doesn't really matter what happens the last handful of games this season for the New Jersey Devils. That shoulder needs to be fixed.
Yep.
And it needs to be right. And it needs to be right for the long term because, unfortunately, with someone like Josh Norris, for instance, and I'm not comparing the two or saying that they're equal, Josh Norris has missed 150-some games in his career already because of his shoulder, because it has never been fixed properly, or because it just continues to be an ailment. So that's the goal and plan, of course, for Hughes.
Before we get to some NHL business, I just wanted to ask you if it's right now. You just talked about the Art Ross race. Like, there's been some interesting discourse, MacKinnon or Kucherov or McDavid or others for Matthews, of course, kind of the four names that are getting thrown around, different fan bases, passionately defending their guy, so on and so forth. Frank, if you're, and I know you do, so maybe you don't have, you can dance around it. That's the wrong term. You know, you can be diplomatic about it because I know you're a voter and you're in the PHWA, you run the PHWA, so on and so forth. But where are you on this Hart Trophy race with it being as heated and competitive as it is?
I'd say it's probably as good of a race as I can remember voting. It is still up for grabs. I would say what I'm leaning towards is, at this exact moment in time, is probably Nikita Kucherov in the number one spot, but it's still really close. We'll see what the last few games bring. Part of the deciding factor for me has been a bit of a deeper dive on Kucherov's numbers and how well he's fared against the top 10 teams in the league. Compared to some others, he's averaging north of 2 points per game against the top 10 teams in the league. Other guys don't have that in their arsenal. And the other part is, how literal of a voter are you? I tend to typically not be super literal in terms of the actual definition of the award, which is most valuable to his team,
yes.
Emphasis on his. And Nikita Kucherov at varying points has been 45 to 47 points ahead of his next closest Tampa Bay Lightning teammate who, and by the way, like, these aren't guys that you sneeze at. Like, Braden Point is having, you know, has an outside shot at 50, and Victor Hedman is having a great bounce back season. And there's plenty of talent there. And McDavid and MacKinnon, they both have 100 point teammates. So how do you sift through that? So that's certainly up for consideration as well. A sneak preview at my ballot would look something like, and again, the usual caveats apply, subject to change,
mm-hmm.
Something like Panarin, MacKinnon, Kucherov,
yeah.
MacKinnon, Panarin, McDavid, Hellebuck.
Okay. And subject
so
to change.
Right now I have McDavid in the four spot, but I think he'd be the first to tell you that, as impressive as it will be if he can, and again with this injury, 100 assists, potentially being the fourth ever, there's lots of, you know, questions. So we'll see.
Last stop, Frank. Frank Saravalli's with us, our Daily Faceoff NHL insider. What is happening in Arizona? It's like a new saga every single week when we talk right now. And now they're saying they're going to go get this land, and then there's people refuting. Like, where are we with the Arizona Coyotes as they try to stay in that area?
I'll try and sift through the BS as best I can, the spin cycle, if you will. The reality is this. Whether you're a Coyotes fan, you think I'm a Coyotes hater, whatever your viewpoint is, I don't really care. Like, I don't care if there's a team on Mars, like, just so we're being honest. The NHL is working dual tracks right now. They're working on what potentialities exist for this team to relocate to Salt Lake City in the next number of weeks. And they're also looking at the potentiality of winning this land auction, state land auction, and actually putting steel and shovels in the ground and getting this thing built. Where do they have the most faith? Which timeline are they most comfortable with? Is Coyotes owner Alex Mariello, is he a combatant in a potential relocation? Is he a willing participant? These are all questions that are tempting to be answered right now. And so, you know, from a public point of view, the Coyotes are sending out renderings. They're sending out full-throated press releases. all looks well above the surface of the water, but underneath I can tell you that there is a vast and swift current that is having this Coyotes franchise paddle furiously under it.
So this Salt Lake stuff, and this is the last part, this is not just pie in the sky. Like, this is a legitimate player here, Salt Lake City, Utah.
1,000%. And ask yourself this, Pat. Do billionaires who have been trying to get a seat at the table willy-nilly go out on Twitter and put out a survey to fans asking them or soliciting them for team names of a potential NHL team in Salt Lake City? The answer to that is no, because for one, anyone who wants a seat at the table knows they need to kiss the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And two, why else would you need to do it on April 8th? If you're getting an expansion franchise, you are years out.
Yeah. It's a good point.
So,
it's a very good point.
Draw whatever conclusions you may.
Say, I don't want to get any more fired up. That's a good way to wrap it up. That was great as always, Frank. Appreciate the insight, my friend. And we will do it again next week. Hey, thanks as always.
Have a good week, and if you drop me again, I will drop you like third period French.
Sacre bleu. By the way, Salt Lake, due south of Calgary, be a cool little addition to the whole region if that were to be the way it goes. There's a kind of a lack of that part of the country that is served. You know, you got your southwest. You got your Northwest. That's all served. You've got Colorado right in the middle, but you're kind of that mid Southwest. It's not the Midwest, but you know what I'm saying? Like the area right below Alberta, there's not a whole lot going on when it comes to NHL hockey. That'd be a straight shot. Edmonton, Calgary, Salt Lake would be a little further from Calgary to Salt Lake, but that's interesting. It would be a cool little addition to the region. And a city that, A, is a great sports town, B, feels like they want NHL hockey. It doesn't work in Arizona right now. Get them the hell out of there. I digress.
Just wondering if you took the opportunity to Wikipedia Salt Lake City to see.
I know enough about Salt Lake. I've been there many times. That's Frank Saravalli, our daily face-off NHL insider, brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit southtrailchrysler.com.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
It's time to go inside hockey on this Tuesday for Calgary Co-op. This hockey season, support local. Find your all-time classics and locally brewed beers. Visit your local Calgary Co-op wine, spirits, beer today. It's Steinberg and Aaron Vickers along with you this hour on Flames Talk. Hi, Vic.
Hello, Patrick.
I'm going to try to not get you fired up like I got Frank fired up. Off the hour.
I'm wondering what it would take. You could drop me anytime, buddy.
Yeah, I just wanted people to hear him clearly. Texted me after. He's like, people know I'm joking, right? Yes, people know you're joking. We're all good. It's fun. Banter. We're allowed to have banter and sarcasm. You and I talked at length Monday about the Flames extending Yegor Sharangovich this summer, and for good reason. He's having a hell of a year. He is one of the breakout players of the year for the Flames. He has done some really good things in solidifying that was a good trade for the Flames, too.
Great trade.
And you and I were generally on the same page Monday because, just quick refresher, Sharangovich, first of 30 this year for the Flames, and he is eligible for a contract extension as early as July 1st. And knowing the season that he's having, we threw out the question. Knowing that he just scored 30, we threw out the question Monday. Would you be open to extending him long-term in the summertime? And you and I were generally on the same page in the range of 5 or 6 years. if the Sharon Govich camp was open to it. We were in kind of the $5 to $6 million range when it comes to what the AAV would be. So we put out a card Monday night on social media, kind of blew up a little bit. And there was some big time discourse going on in the replies on Instagram and on Twitter. And not all of it was about what an extension would look like. There were definitely a few people who said, well, hold on a second. Why extend him? Why not trade him after a career season? Why not capitalize on Sharon Govich's value being as high as it is right now? Honestly, I don't know what his trade value would be, but that was definitely out there. And I don't agree with the thinking. I don't think that is the best course of action for the Flames, but I think it's a valid conversation. I think there were some really valid arguments made. I personally, Vix, like the idea of extending him more than I like the idea of trading him. I think there's more value in keeping Sharon Govich. Again, if you can get a deal that makes sense. 8 years at $10 million? Well, no, that doesn't make sense. But kind of the numbers ballpark that we threw out, 6 times 5.5, 6 times 5.75, 6 by 6. I think those are, A, I think that's a fair ballpark. B, I think it's something that works for both sides. And I think from a team perspective, there would be a lot of wisdom and a lot of sense in doing that. But the arguments for trading him are not irrelevant. There were plenty of good, valid arguments saying, well, hold on a second. He is rolling on a bit of a percentages heater this year. He scored 30, shooting at over 18%, which is a career high. And his underlying numbers are not super sexy. He's not a big-time play driver. He's not a big-time possession monster. All those types of things. And those are all very fair arguments. But for a Flames team that has struggled to score, for a Flames team that is not going scorched earth, for a Flames team that is looking to have players that are good and ready to help them right now in, say, 3 or 4 years, Sharon Govich seems like a really good guy to be a part of that when they'd be coming out of whatever this R word is, retool, rebuild, restructure, however you want to phrase it. So while I understand that there are, you know, plenty of reasons to say, well, maybe this is the time to capitalize on his value, I think there's more value in him sticking with the Flames and signing long-term.
That's kind of where I am too, because just for me, he ticks too many boxes from a team perspective, looking at a 25-year-old who would be 27 by the time that extension kicks in. That makes you go, it makes sense for us to want to go longer term on Sharon Govich. As I mentioned, you'd be getting him from age 27 to 32 or 27 to 33, depending on whether it's a 5 or a 6 year. So you're getting him through some prime years of his career. Again, we don't really need to run through the credentials, but here they are. He's your team's leading scorer. He is second in points. He plays power play and penalty kill, and he plays center, left, and right. So from a coaching perspective, even if you want to take a Ryan Huska perspective, You can play him in all situations at any position at any time, and he's still your leading goal scorer. And I will suggest, as you've mentioned, suggest isn't the right word here, but I'll use it anyway. Yeah, he's over his career mark on shooting percentage. If you throw it as high, which is this season, his low, which was last season in a disastrous sort of year with the New Jersey Devils, he still averages out to 14.15, which is still 24 goals as it would stand today based on his 166 shots. So depending on what number he does come in at, if he hits 30 again, that's great. If he has even more upside, because let's still keep in mind, this is only year 4 for him.
Yep.
So there's still potentially room to grow in his game. I don't think he's a finished product as it sits. And then you just kind of layer in the fact that, well, for the first 15-ish games of the season, he wasn't the Sharon Govich for the last 4.5, 5 months that we've seen. He was new team, new environment, getting used to. And once he got used to being a member of the Calgary Flames, he kind of took off. So if he's signing him based on 30 and he gives you 25, You'd like a little bit more, but it's not the worst thing in the world. And if you sign him at 30 and he ends up giving you 35, even better, just because of the other elements of the game that he touches. Again, both sides of special teams, all positions. Now, if we're in a situation where he doesn't want to sign, where he goes, I've got 1 year left, and then I'm an unrestricted free agent,
that's
an entirely different conversation
We're
having.
For me, and part of the reason why I'm a lot skeptical about moving this guy, aside from the fact that you need players and you can't trade everybody, and sometimes when you find something, you want to, hey, let's reward ourselves for finding this by keeping him around. Take all those things aside, I'm skeptical that the Flames would get the value that I think Sharon Govich should have if he had multiple 30-goal seasons under his belt. Like right now, I think you're going to get the value of teams saying, yeah, he's done it once, but, right? And I don't know if you're getting the value that you should be getting for a guy that I think has the potential to be what I just said, a multiple-time 30-goal scorer. That should get you one thing via trade, and I don't think there's a great chance you're going to get it because it's only been one season. Whereas the value of signing him, keeping him around, and then being proven right, which I get is no guarantee, but then you're proven right, you're like, okay, well, there's a whole lot more value in him being that for us than getting the, you know, maybe less than commensurate return we think he should get in the trade market. Well, that's another part of it for me.
Yeah, that's sort of the flip side to it is, okay, if you go and you want to, from an asset management standpoint, I guess, if you will, and you want to flip this asset for more futures, what exactly is the market? Because again, for everything we just said, 25 years old, would be 26 when he's flipped because he turns 26 in the offseason, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he does. I believe it's June.
Plays both sides of special teams, all three positions again, but he still has only hit 30 once. Played at a 24-goal pace as a rookie, 26-goal pace as a sophomore. But if you're a team looking to acquire a Sharon Govich, are you willing to give up multiple firsts for him? Is the market a first and a prospect? At what point, like, are you trading Sharon Govich in the hopes of drafting a younger Sharon Govich? Because he's still only 25 at this point, and he'd still only be 26. So are you trading him with the hope that your return in 3 or 4 years, quasi best case scenario, lands you a player that can score 30 and play both sides of special teams? Because you've already got, in theory, what you're looking to acquire in an asset that is in your age range of, the Calgary Flames need futures. There's no doubt about it. But if you have a mid-20s player that can perform now, that to me is equally as important for this retool or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. And I look, and I want to make sure that, like, while I disagree with the idea, I don't think that's the best way for the Flames to approach it. I understand the thinking and I understand the reasoning. There's plenty of validity and there's plenty of I think, valid arguments that were made. I went and read a lot of the replies.
And there were a lot.
And, you know, I did some selective muting on some. Boy, do I love that mute button. But there were some really good replies in there about, you know, why extending him or why looking at moving him would be the way to go. I come out on the side that extending him gives the Flames more value, but I think it's a valid conversation. A few texts at 96960. Scott in Yorkton says, why are we only talking about a maximum 6 years? Why wouldn't we consider an 8-year contract with a guy that's so young? Well, as Vix just said, he turns 26 in June and would be 27 when the new contract kicks in. I think 6 is the perfect number.
For both sides, for me.
Takes him to 33-ish, which gives him on the back end an opportunity for one more UFA year or one more, you know, decent UFA contract, rather, especially if the 6 years works out the way both sides hope. But then on the Flames side, it does give you some flexibility where they're like, okay, do we want to go forward with the guy who's 33 or is it time to move on, that type of thing? So I think five, six years is the nice sweet spot, and I think it's the nice sweet spot for both sides. Honestly, I think you're bang on that front.
Yeah, and for me, I'm always more from a team perspective looking at Typically in, well, I shouldn't say typically, in certain situations, select situations, a shorter is always kind of better. It's not so much the dollar figure that can hinder or handcuff a team. It's the full length of term. And for me, I do like five a lot more than I like six. If it has to be six to get the deal done, I'm okay going that extra year. So, but from a team perspective, again, you're getting him from his prime years of 27 to 32. And he may be on the downside of that 32. Typically, peaks happen earlier than they have a decade ago or 15 years ago. But even from the player perspective, too, where if he's still a productive 25-point player that can play on both sides of special teams, you know, who knows where the cap is 5 years from now, it could be a situation where he sets himself up for one more. I don't want to necessarily call it a home run retirement contract, but it puts him in a similar situation to where Tyler Toffoli is, to be honest, right now, yeah. Where you're in a spot now where you've got one more chance to, you know, sort of cash in on a longer-term contract at a time where you're still a productive player.
Kevin in Carstairs says, I don't know what's going on with this fan base that they're never happy with the players they get. This player is producing and is young and has more potential, but yet they want to get rid of him for something that might be good for them. My curiosity is, what are they trying to get for him? If it's draft picks, that's like shooting craps. You never know what you're going to get. Murray in Rocky Mountain House says, if it's a rebuild, you trade him. If it's a retool, you sign him. And I think we know what the Flames are attempting to do here, and that is the latter as opposed to the former.
Yeah, the Flames would rather be competitive in two or three seasons than five or six with a full-on teardown rebuild.
I think it's more fair to say three or four.
Fair enough.
Three gets you to the 27 opening
of the new building.
And so, yeah, another year on the other. So three or four, I think, is maybe so even a little bit more of a realistic time frame.
And even at that time frame, Sharon Govich is still in his 20s. So you have a core piece that's a part of your team now that's seeing through this retooling.
Yeah.
And on the other side, when you want to be competitive again, he still hasn't hit 30.
That's our look inside hockey for Calgary Co-op. Let's go local Calgary, from best from the West, Canadian produce to quality only Alberta meats. Find your local at Calgary Co-op. Shop online or in-store today. A few other things to touch on. Ilya Solovyov, I believe, will be in the lineup on Tuesday night in San Jose. So he'll be back in for his seventh NHL game. And honestly, at this stage, if your last name is Solovyov or Coronado, a little bit different with Wolf because of the position, but if your name is of the variety that does not have hundreds of NHL games under their belt, I don't really see a reason why you're not playing. They've got six games here. Play Solovyov while you can. There's no sense in sitting him. The same is true with Matt Coronado. I think there's plenty of reason to maybe bump him a little bit further up the depth chart and give him some more ice time. Instead of five, maybe it's 15 for Coronado. Like, there's no reason not to be doing these things right now. And obviously, they've moved Zeri to center. They're giving Pospisil a hell of a chance that he's making all the best of on Kadri's line with Kuzmenko right now. So, Solovyov's here. You might as well play him. There's no reason not to play him. And I'm glad that we'll be seeing him, it sounds like, on Tuesday night.
It's experiment slash discovery time for the Calgary Flames, I guess, is the way that I would put it, where you know what you have in the vets, and maybe you can slice their minutes slightly in order to get a better look at players like Solovyov, as you mentioned, get a better read on what Matt Coronado is right now, and use that as a teaching tool to sort of give him the blueprint for where he needs to be come September and October next year. And again, you're doing kind of the same thing with Zeri. You know, he's an established NHLer at this point for the Calgary Flames, but you don't know what he is as a center. For me, this is all about experiment, discovery, and putting a development path together for some of these young players so that they're in a better spot come training camp.
And go out and maybe, you know, really put the boots to a team well below you in the standings. I know that the Flames are a different team than they were a month ago. I get that, and they are where they are. But go out and put the boots to a team fighting for a lottery spot. The Flames are not in the slacking for Macklin conversation, right? They're just not. They're in the hunt for maybe they could get to number five in the lottery odds, that which would be fine. But, you know, six games to go. If tonight is supposed to be a win for the Flames, then make it a lopsided one. Like, beat them 8-1 or something like that. Just for a quick quick, like, oh, maybe they can beat these teams, because we know how much that's plagued them over the last couple of seasons.
And if you're going to cost yourself 2 points in the inverse standings, you might as well do it with a statement. What did I say?
No,
I said
not,
inverse?
Not, it's not. No, no. I'm.
I thought I mispronounced something.
No. I'm not laughing at you. It's just that's something.
I didn't know how else to say it.
That's something that like 15 years ago, or like when we were both first getting into the industry, and you and I were getting into the industry at the height of the 04 team, and you know those years, just inverse standing. There's never thought as we were getting into covering hockey and these jobs that we're so privileged to have, that would be a thing that is very much in the lexicon, and yet it absolutely is, and rightfully so. I just thought
I used the wrong word there, and I went,
No. I try not to point out when people make mistakes, because I don't like it when people do that to me, because I make mistakes every 47 words. So be a lot of pointing out mistakes. He's Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll wrap us up this hour on Flames Talk. Have yourself a wonderful rest of your Tuesday, Vicks. Thanks to Shan and Cam, our producers this hour. And this hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.